This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz Dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way.
I'm Molly.
And I'm Matthew.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and you can't have any.
And today we're talking about packaging.
That's right. This episode was suggested by host me.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to be clear that we're not talking about like packaging, like aesthetics. We're not even really going to get into anything having to do with product engineering.
Yeah, and we're not going to get into negative effects of food packaging either.
Oh, yeah. No, that is...
It sort of goes without saying, I think.
Yeah. But what we're going to talk about is like the functionality of food packaging, specifically our likes and dislikes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this was a spilled mail a while back that we kind of like bailed on answering well, and we're making it right by... Mm-hmm. On the one hand, we're making it right by doing a whole episode. On the other hand, and I don't know who sent the mail, so like they're getting erased from history, like when Michael J. Fox's head disappeared.
Oh, did that happen?
Yes, but then he got Crispin Glover to meet Leah Thompson, and then it came back.
Oh, good, thank God. Oh, was that in Back to the Future?
No, this really happened.
Oh, great. Okay, all right. I want to start out on memory lane.
Please do.
The first thing that comes to mind when I think about food packaging is Pepperidge Farm, okay? So, Goldfish bags, those cookie bags.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, I know that Pepperidge Farm has some products that, you know, come in other formats, but here we're talking about the bags.
Yeah, no, those bags blow.
Those bags blow. So, thin paper with, like, foil lining, but not... there's air between the two of them, right? Yep. The top of the bag is always folded over multiple times and glued down. You can neither unfold it neatly without it tearing.
Nope.
Nor can you like sort of pry the bag open, you know, the way you might with a bag of chips, like pulling it either side.
Right.
It is a terrible idea. And I've been doing it for my entire lifetime. Why do they do this to us?
I would definitely buy more Pepperidge Farm cookies if I didn't have that nagging feeling of like these are going to go stale because of the bag.
I mean, here's the thing. On the one hand, like it's nice that the bags are really lightweight. I'm sure that like saves money in shipping or whatever.
Sure.
But
like I'm not asking them to be shipped in like a lead vault.
But
no, actually I am. I want the bags to be made of lead.
But hold on. Matthew, Are you really afraid of them going stale? Because I happen to know that you own Chip Clips because a couple of them have made it to my house.
That's right. I have been smuggling Chip Clips to your house. I've been trying to send you a coded message.
No, but like, is Pepperidge Farm in bed with all the chip clip makers?
They're in bed with Big Clip, yes.
Big Clip?
I don't know. Like, I don't even think to, like, you raise an interesting point because, like, in my house, chips live on top of the fridge, but cookies live in the root cellar, which is what I call my cupboard.
Yep.
And, like, I don't often think to put chip clips on something that's going into the root cellar. I think of chip clips as like going up on top of the fridge.
Oh, I think of chip clips as going on anything that won't close.
Yeah, no, that like, all right, no, probably. I don't know. I'm so confused.
I also keep scotch tape in my kitchen.
Oh.
I mean, I would keep like, you know, masking tape or something, but I never seem to have it. So I keep a scotch tape dispenser in my kitchen so that I can tape things closed. Oh, that's a really smart idea.
I will sometimes go get some scotch tape to close like a pasta bag or something.
I do that a lot. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, Pepperidge Farm. I mean, I could probably count on one hand the number of times I've opened one of those bags neatly without tearing or...
Yeah. God. No, that's an interesting outlier because I feel like at this point in history, like food packaging is mostly pretty good, at least in terms of practicality. And so like I think about like – so like when did some advances happen during my like late childhood to adult life and like which things are still bad like the Pepperidge Farm bags? So like the advances that come to mind are the Oreo like peel open,
yes,
like reclosable top that apparently I had to teach you about.
That's right.
And one that just came to mind while we were talking about this, fruit roll-ups. Like fruit roll-ups,
oh,
like, you know,
wait,
like they were an advancement in like flavor because they put a bunch more sugar in them. But basically it was fruit leather, but they made it so like you could peel it off neatly. That's a huge packaging win.
Hold on. Wait a minute. What was it before?
So
haven't they always been on that like thin, shiny on one side
right,
plastic?
No, I'm not saying they improved fruit roll-ups. I'm saying they introduced fruit roll-ups, which were mainly an advancement in fruit leather packaging.
Ah, got it. Okay.
More so than like fruit leather as a edible product.
Got it. Okay. Okay. This makes sense.
Yeah.
Hold on. I have to say one more thing about the Pepperidge Farm bags, which is that I think part of what's irritating to me about it is that there's also no easy way to recycle it, right? Because you've got this paper bag that also has a foil lining. And I'm aware that I could probably pry the foil lining out of it.
I want to see you do this.
It's not very, very neatly attached. But the bag is clearly not designed for me to do that.
No.
Anyway.
Yeah, no, it's basically doing everything wrong.
It's doing everything wrong.
Okay, so why don't we just kind of trade like picks and anti-picks?
Perfect, perfect.
Like, did we coin the phrase anti-picks?
I think you did.
I kind of like it.
Okay, number one. Okay, Matthew.
Yes.
I hate opening tuna cans.
Okay, I also do because they have tuna inside and I don't like it.
Okay, I love canned tuna.
Okay.
And here's the thing. I don't want to buy it in a pouch.
All right.
Because I like to buy like from like producers that are...
Local?
Local-ish.
Ish, yeah.
Anyway, so I don't want to buy in a pouch. I'm always buying the ones that are actually in like a can. But here's the thing. You can peel back the lid to a certain point, and then it's kind of stuck. And if you want to peel it further, you're going to have to exert enough muscle.
Oh, yeah. I know what you mean.
That it just feels like, you know, 1 millimeter off, and you're going to slice yourself.
Yep.
Terrifying. Yeah. Hate it. Hate it.
Okay. The Swanson chicken broth carton, I think has come a long way.
Yes.
It used to have that thing where you like flipped back the plastic and then it had to peel off the foil and it was hard to peel.
I remember those.
And now you just you unscrew a cap and then you can screw it right back on.
I really missed the point at which that conversion happened.
I don't remember exactly, but the 2000s, I think.
There was a moment when I was opening up a box of tomato soup that was packaged that way, like a Tetra Pak thing. And I unscrewed the little cap and was so perplexed by the fact that there was no seal underneath it. I was like, oh my God, has this been tampered with? Like, as though somebody's going through the grocery store tampering with things of tomato.
Yeah, no, you tampered it yourself.
But I love this advancement as well.
It's good stuff.
Okay. Matthew, what do you think about foaming soap dispensers?
That is a really good question, Molly.
I mean, I know this isn't food packaging, but it's food adjacent.
It's definitely fair game. I have mixed feelings. So I feel like they wear out more quickly than non-foaming is. I feel this is the case, although I have no proof. And I do like the foam, but
I don't love the foam.
Yeah.
I prefer a more like concentrated soap feeling. And most of the time, I feel like the foam isn't concentrated enough.
That's fair. And like the main that is related to kind of the main issue I have with them, which is that I can't really go back and forth between foaming and non-foaming because they take a lot but different effort to like you know get them off your hands. And so, like, if I've been using the foaming for a while and then I switch to the non-foaming, then I'll, like, walk away from the sink with soap on my hands.
Wow.
Yeah.
So okay. Now I think you really just can't go back and forth.
No. And wow, we have the regular in the house at the moment, and it's fine.
I really like regular soap.
But not bar soap.
But
liquid soap?
I also do like bar soap, but I don't like... If I lived alone,
okay,
I would use bar soap because I really like it.
Have you ever tried? But, so first of all, have you tried a shampoo bar?
I have not tried a shampoo bar.
I use a shampoo bar every day and I love it.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, I want to hear more about it.
Have you ever tried a dishwashing soap bar?
No.
This is a thing.
Do you grate some into your dishwasher or something?
Dishwasher, like dish soap.
Oh,
but yes, you start by grating some on your box grater.
No, but here's the thing. We do use bar soap in the bathroom. There's a bathroom. We have two bathrooms in our house, one upstairs, one downstairs. We have bar soap in the downstairs bathroom, but June and I are the only ones who use it, and I use it much more than she does. And somehow I don't like the idea of sharing bar soap with a lot of people.
Yeah, I get that.
Like more than two, than one other person.
Because you don't know where they're putting it.
You don't know where they're putting it. Also, I feel like there's something a little gnarly about bar soap when it comes to like raw chicken or.
Yeah, no,
I just want to be able to like squeeze some soap on my hand without like touching much of anything.
No, I agree. Okay. Speaking of dish soap, so my favorite dish soap is the seventh generation, like unscented, and they did a terrible thing that I will never forgive them for, except I continue to buy the soap. They put this green, like no drip nozzle on it, or like not no drip, but like clog resistant nozzle on it. Mm. And then they took it away. Oh. And I don't know why. I don't even want to know why. I just want to like stew.
Okay.
But because like it was a really good nozzle and now like sometimes I have to unclog the nozzle.
I'm realizing that my dish soap nozzle never clogs.
Maybe what kind of dish soap do you use?
I tend to use Mrs. Meyer's because I like the smell.
Okay. Maybe they have a clog resistant nozzle.
I don't know. Maybe. Yeah. You know what I forgot to mention? Speaking of like nozzles and things. Okay. So I have bought Best Foods mayonnaise in two different formats, like the old school like
jar,
and then the squeeze thing that you store upside down.
Sure.
And I really like the squeeze thing mm-hmm. for the tidiness of it. I mean, it doesn't eliminate the need for a knife because you still want to smear it around.
Right.
But I really like the tidiness of it.
Oh, I get that.
But I don't love that I can't get all the product out of it. Whereas sure. with the jar, I can really get all the product out. Anyway.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
I feel like there have been a lot of improvements in drip-resistant pour spouts in my lifetime. Mm. And I'm particularly thinking about soy sauce and olive oil bottles.
Yes.
Yes. Like these, they work really well now. But somehow this does not seem to have extended to most dark soy sauce bottles.
Interesting.
Like I have some really good dark soy sauce that I bought from malamarket.com. It tastes great, but it drips down the side of the bottle like crazy. And dark soy sauce is the one that like will stain and like you the one you least want to have drip down the side of the bottle.
Do you think it's because it's a smaller producer or?
I think it's probably something like that. Okay. But I feel like I've also fairly recently bought like big, like, you know, Pearl River Bridge brand dark soy sauce, and it was not particularly drip resistant either.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Erin, get on the drip resistant train, please.
Gosh, I hadn't even thought about drips, but that is a really, really good point.
We all need to think more about drips.
My olive oil bottle never drips anymore, and it used to always drip. Huh. Okay. So, I am a coffee drinker, and
Wait, can I interrupt and say something? Ask something else about the olive oil bottle. When you are done, do you have like a glass olive oil bottle with like the plastic yep. anti drip thing? When you're done, how do you get that out so you can recycle the glass bottle?
Oh my God, Matthew, I've been recycling it with that thing in it.
Okay, well you're a bad citizen, but I'm about to improve your life
okay.
in two ways.
Okay.
You're gonna recycle better and you're gonna have fun, because what you do is you take a butter knife or a steak knife and you put it like with the blade kind of against the base of the plastic part and just kind of spring it out of there.
Like you're sabering it. How did you arrive at this method?
Like, I'm just like inherently like you know, I have an extreme sports background. Mm-hmm. Like I used to do
You used to do yoga in my living room.
That was pretty extreme. Now I do like a different YouTube workout. I did that sport where you like water ski and shoot targets at the same time.
It's called skeeting.
Yeah, that's what we used to call it on the tour. So I just like if I can solve a problem using a steak knife, I will.
Okay. All right. So this next one, I think Pepperidge Farm could learn something from the makers of coffee bags.
Okay. This is something, I don't drink coffee, so it's something I know very little about. So school me.
Okay. So most of the time, if you buy coffee that is already...
They have like the fold out like metal tabs,
that's
right?
That's right.
Okay.
They basically have almost like the equivalent of like a twist tie,
yes.
like a tie that has...
That would be perfect for
a little bit of
farm
wire
bag.
In like a flat ribbon of plastic,
yes.
and you can fold the bag over and kind of bend the wire around it to hold it shut. Brilliant, simple, and if you buy your coffee in bulk, usually the bags are just unlined brown paper mm-hmm. bags, and so then all you do is you like rip that little tie off and then recycle the bag when you're done.
Yes.
That's great. Pretty great.
Yeah.
However, that said, I tend to buy my coffee already in 3/4 or 1 pound bags.
Mm-hmm.
And those tend to be lined with either plastic or aluminum for freshness purposes.
Sure.
I don't love that, but I have to say, so I usually buy Tony's brand, which is a local roaster, Tony's Beans. And
when you say, you mean you just steal it from your mom's house.
That's right. I love how easy it is to open the bags that those beans come in. And this is not the case for like Stumptown or any number of other bags that I have tried.
Good work, Tony.
So here's the thing, like you can kind of grab the, so imagine you bend back the little metal tie thing and you unroll the top, right? But it's still sealed together. Well, if you grab a hold of diagonal corners of it and pull, it pulls apart cleanly.
Sure.
I don't know if this makes sense.
Yeah, no, I get it.
It is profoundly satisfying.
Sort of like how you open a microwave popcorn bag.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And Tony's coffee bean bags always do that neatly for me.
Awesome.
Ugh, love it.
Okay, let's talk about integrated zipper locks
yes.
on stuff that comes in bags.
Yeah.
So I feel like this has been a huge advancement in our lifetime, though, like not without its problems.
Sure.
So like, for example, right now, like so I'm thinking like grains, granola, and nuts are the things that come to mind. I'm sure we can probably think of some others.
Like the dried fruit at Trader
dried
Joe's.
Dried fruit, yes, of course. The dried trail mix.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Most of the snacks at Trader Joe's that are on the dried fruit and nut aisle come in like integrated zipper pouches.
Yeah. So right now, like I got a big 22 ounce bag of Private Selection chocolate and sea salt granola at QFC that came with a very functional zipper lock reclosure mechanism. And
feeling.
I'm loving it.
What a feeling.
However, zipper lock mechanisms vary wildly in quality. Like some of them do not work at all. And like, why do they exist? And then some of them work great.
We have to buy like large bags of hay for Percy, our guinea pig.
Yeah.
And the brand that we like to buy has an integrated zipper thing. Mm-hmm. And you should have
hay there.
You should have seen me like wrestling with this fucking zipper the other night.
Yeah.
I'm always wrestling with a zipper at night, but this particular time it was Percy's.
Yeah, but this time
hay
it wasn't
zipper.
Pants related.
That's right.
One of my like least favorite packaging experiences I've ever had was like during the pandemic, I was ordering like Amazon's house brand of zipper lock bags, which were very cheap and very good. And then they like changed suppliers or something. And like I got the same brand and the zipper lock completely sucked. And
did you spill a bunch of stuff?
Well, no, it was just like obviously not working. And like I did get my money back, but they were like, okay, now just throw it away. I'm like, this sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, we talked on the last episode, which was the Ritz cracker episode. We talked about Ritz cracker packaging, which has a lot in common with graham cracker packaging.
Yes.
In that, you know, you got a cardboard box, you've got inside this sort of like tan colored, like wax paper feeling sleeve. I don't know whoever thought this was a good idea. It's dumb. It's dumb.
Yeah. So basically, like I think the principle that we're both talking about is like if we're not going to use the whole product right away, and if there's any chance that it's going to spill or go stale, give us a good way to reclose it.
Yes, absolutely. And I think this is especially annoying to me with graham crackers because, you know, you buy them for something like a recipe that's got a graham cracker crust or a camping trip where you're going to make s'mores. And inevitably, then you kind of like forget about them. And there is no chance of them being fresh even like 2 weeks later.
Yeah, absolutely. No chance. And like a stale graham cracker is bad.
It
like
is how they get so like damp. Weird.
So gross.
Yeah, I don't understand why they can't do better. Even just like give us like a little like sticky pull tab thing. Yeah. Like Rancho Gordo, those bean packages come with a sticker on it that you can use to reclose it.
Yeah, which those kind of work. Like if you have to reclose it like more than once, the sticker will kind of wear out.
That's true. But I do think, I mean, probably most of us are using like half a bag or a whole bag of Rancho Gordo beans at a time.
Sure. Yeah, like one example of like a product I love that the packaging just needs to grow up is Ghirardelli chocolate chips. Ah. Like I keep these on hand all the time, but like first of all, like when you open the bag, like usually it'll kind of like rip down the side and like open way further than you wanted. And then what do you do once it's open if you're snacking on them like I do? Like I usually end up like dumping them into a Ziploc bag. Just put a Ziploc mechanism on the bag.
Well, and I would say that's the case for all chocolate chips, frankly.
Yeah, why did I like call out Ghirardelli as if their chocolate chip packaging is any different? It's not.
But I do think a big part of the problem, and this is also something with chip bags, is the way that they also tear, like that they're prone to tearing.
Yeah, I feel like some chip bags are a lot better than others because if it like is designed so that it will only really open easily along the top, then I don't really have any problem with that. And I guess I go through a bag of chips quickly enough, so quickly that I don't need it to be like airtight, reclosed.
Yeah, yeah.
Emmy award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
Okay, a couple things that I want to give a shout out to deli meat packages.
Okay,
You know, even though they are plastic, like they now have a peel and reseal.
Yes.
Thing, which is nice.
Or it's like great. If I get them from the deli counter at Safeway, they'll usually put in like with like a sliding zipper bag. I like
that.
Oh,
really? Yeah. Oh, I haven't seen those. Instead of just wrapping it in like butcher paper.
Right.
Ah, okay. That's smart. I like that.
I really like the Tillamook baby loaf packaging.
Oh, I am excited to talk about this. So by baby loaf, you mean the size that you and I probably both buy.
Yeah, 2-pound oblong.
Okay. To be clear, it comes in like a thick-ish plastic.
Stretchy-ish wrap.
It's not really stretchy.
Not really stretchy, I guess.
But it is like shrink-wrapped and sealed around the cheese. And so to get into the cheese, you do have to use a knife or some sharp
scissors. Problem can be solved with a steak knife, that's how I will solve it.
That's right. What is really interesting about the packaging on the Tillamook baby loaf, like this particular plastic coat they've got it in, is that, as you pointed out, somehow it keeps the cheese in pretty good condition.
Yeah, it like breaks all the rules because like you can't really reclose it.
No, you can't.
And yet, like, so I do, like, you know, put some foil over it or put it in a Ziploc, but then it really, like, clings to and protects the remainder of the cheese, even though it takes us, like, 3 or 4 weeks to go through one of these.
Oh, big time. No, I always wind up opening it, but I don't cut any of the plastic wrapper off.
Right.
I use the excess to just sort of rewrap the cheese, and then I put it in a gallon-sized bag.
But it's very satisfying to, like, peel it apart, like, and, like, sort of, like, extrude it down the log of cheese.
Yes.
It's real fun.
It's interesting. Have you ever thrown away or been cooking with somebody else who threw away that plastic wrapper and instead you wind up putting the thing naked in a Ziploc bag with some paper towel?
That's gonna get moldy.
It gets terrible, like, right off the bat. I mean, it smells honestly like it's gone bad. And it's fascinating to me that you would think that cheese in, like, a Ziploc bag with some air around it, maybe a paper towel to regulate the moisture, you would think that would be a pretty good environment. It is not nearly as good as the plastic sleeve thing.
Also, I don't want to see the whole loaf naked. It feels wrong somehow.
Well, this has usually happened when there's, like, less than half of it left.
Okay.
Yeah.
I will do that, like, if there's, like, an eighth of it left.
Okay. All right. Matthew.
Yes. What do you got?
I don't know if you've ever encountered this, but Clausen pickle jars, just a really ordinary glass pickle jar. Also a really useful jar because it's, you can wash it out and reuse it. But it never reseals very well after the first time you open it.
Weird.
I don't understand what the deal is. I've now had two, I have a sample size of two. But in the past year, I have had two jars of Clausen pickles, both of which, when tilted, when we are taking them out of the fridge, have, like, poured pickle brine all over the inside of the fridge.
Like, shouldn't this be a technology that matured, like, 150 years ago?
I know. This is just like a vacuum sealed lid.
That is so unacceptable.
And I'm good at putting lids back on.
My child is
not necessarily.
Do you kind of, like, back it off like counterclockwise until it clinks into place and then yes. Tighten it? Yeah, me too. Very satisfying.
Whenever we have an open Clausen jar in the fridge, I tape a piece of paper to it that says, do not tilt.
Wow.
Yeah.
But yeah. You should take a picture of that and send it to the CEO of Clausen.
Yeah. Maybe he'd send me a new fridge.
Dr. Clausen.
Maybe it's
Santa Clausen.
Santa Clausen. All right. Okay.
Yeah, maybe he'd send you a new fridge. Yeah, is that what you said?
Yeah, because I've
spilled you're just full of pickle juice.
I've spilled pickle brine in my fridge twice.
You should.
Yeah. Yeah.
See what happens.
Okay,
let's talk about milk and cream,
because
I think like this has come a long way. I think my favorite is the milk that I get at Safeway, which is the classic paper carton, but with a plastic, screw off spout embedded into the top.
Now, Matthew, what do you do about recycling that?
I just toss it in the paper and figure it out.
That's what I've been doing too. But I think that, like, environmentally, like, that's supposed to be a bad thing.
It's probably bad.
It sure is
an advantage in terms of keeping the milk fresh over like the old kind, though.
God, big
and also
time.
Like and also preventing spills.
Yes, absolutely. It is so nice, especially for those of us who enjoy camping or whatever. It's nice to be able to take a carton of milk and not worry about it spilling.
Mm-hmm.
I also really appreciate that with heavy cream.
Definitely.
Because it keeps for so... I mean, heavy cream has always been a good keeper, but it keeps for such a long time with those screw-on lid things.
Yep.
Okay, I just have a couple more things.
Yeah,
and
me too.
One I feel really strongly about, and that is tomato paste in a tube.
Love it.
Oh my God, what an upgrade.
The only problem I have with it is that I don't know where to put the tube in the fridge.
I have had some tubes long enough too that they have, like, kind of gotten a little brittle or cracked at one end, and then you have to kind of stand it up in, like, a mason jar in the door of the fridge.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not the advantage I thought it was.
No, but like, if you get through it, like, in a reasonable amount of time, I think it is. It's just, like, I usually toss it in the door and it sort of falls behind, like, a kimchi jar and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is great.
So I've noticed some of those say double concentrated. Mm-hmm. Does that mean that you use half as much?
Wow, that's a good question.
Because
I don't know.
I don't...
Like, would you be able to tell, like, in the finished recipe if you like, used twice as much or half as much tomato paste in a typical recipe?
I don't know.
I don't either.
I don't know. Okay. All right.
I would just use the same amount.
I also really like it when harissa comes in that format.
Yes.
Because I don't use very much harissa. And so for the like couple times I use it a year, it's pretty great that it's just in a tube.
Yeah. Good. Thanks a lot, toothpaste industry. I mean, that sounded sarcastic. Thank you, toothpaste industry, for introducing us to that format.
Yes.
I found that miso packaging is mostly weirdly bad.
It is very bad.
And I don't understand why, because Japan is generally brilliant with food packaging, but it just comes with this thin plastic lid that immediately falls off.
It never stays on.
I scoop it out into a more airtight container. But like, why?
I don't understand why they can't just give it a lid that stays on. Like the lid of a deli container or something.
Yeah.
Like what is the problem?
Don't know.
Okay. Here is something. Here is a food packaging situation that I only recently became acquainted with. So I hadn't realized that baby food has pretty much switched entirely from jars to pouches. And I mean, you can still find jars, but it is by and large pouches. On the one hand, this is nice because they're like lightweight and, you know, they don't break and you can just like throw them in a bag or whatever. And your kid can like suck from them if you're, you know, a lot of people just give them to their kid.
I'm just realizing now, why does it have such a huge cap and so your kid doesn't choke on it?
That's right. But it is still a choking hazard.
Oh, great.
Yeah. No, I have fished so many of these out of my dog's mouth.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, you're not supposed to let your kid play with this cap because it could totally.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Anyway, here's the deal. Also, I've been thinking about this because we have a lot of these baby food pouches. Like they're made of that plastic that's like multi-layer plastic that can only be recycled by like a precious few companies. Like you can't recycle it in municipal recycling in Seattle.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, none of the plastic you put in municipal recycling gets recycled except for PET bottles.
Where does it all go?
Oh, into a landfill.
Oh, it does? So like my yogurt tubs?
Yes, plastic
and stuff?
Plastic recycling is a myth perpetuated by the plastics industry. It's not a real thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Bummer. Well, so then what happens to these things? Because there's a company called TerraCycle that really specializes in recycling multi-layer plastics.
Okay.
And
I don't know. I'm skeptical, but I don't know.
Okay. Okay. Well, thanks for raining on my parade, Matthew. Now I'm filling landfills when I thought I was being such a good recycler.
Well, I think we all are.
Okay. Being good recyclers or
filling landfills.
So tell me, are you really
going to make me eat baby food?
Yeah, tell me how you feel about watching this come out of a tube.
I don't like it. It looks like diaper gravy.
Ew, why did you say that word?
Pretty good. This is banana blueberry.
This is banana blueberry.
Yeah, it tastes mostly like banana.
My kid likes to suck on these things, but as you can imagine, like it's a recipe for disaster because all he has to do is squeeze it like once and it's everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
So we try to make him...
Oh, yeah, so it's like you can like turn it into a fire hose very easily,
oh,
right?
Oh, yes. We try to only squirt it into spoons.
Okay, I have a question.
Yeah.
Have you tried uncapping it, putting it on the ground and stomping on it?
No.
It seems like that could be very satisfying.
That could be very satisfying. Wow, that is really banana-y.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty good.
It is pretty good.
I understand why babies like it.
Yeah.
Also, babies will eat anything. I've got like three more short ones.
Okay.
One of them I'm not sure could turn into a real discussion.
Okay.
Ice cream cartons, they're bad.
Okay, so like, hold on. Talk to me more about this.
Okay, so I'm thinking of like my favorite format of ice cream to get is like it used to be a half gallon, but now it's like 1.5 quarts, like private selection paper tub of ice cream.
Got it.
So it's sort of like rounded rectangle shaped. And the problem is that because you have to scoop ice cream out, the packaging has to sustain some serious G-forces. And like as an extreme sports competitor, I know G-forces. And so like by the time you've gotten like half of the ice cream out, like, you know, you're starting the container starting to deform. You may have like punctured it in places. It's like just not up to the task.
Yeah.
And yet, like, I'm not sure how you'd fix this because like I don't want it to be like metal or glass or hard plastic either.
Yeah. I mean, then you've got companies like Talenti or whatever.
That's
true. That do a plastic one.
The Talenti works pretty well.
But now we're getting back to plastic. plastics, I know. Matthew. Then you've got, hold on, what about like Häagen-Dazs, for instance? I think they have, maybe it's just that the pint is smaller than the quart thing you're talking
right.
about.
Right, so like it's going to sustain less scooping before it's done.
Sure.
I think I've still ruined a Häagen-Dazs pint container.
What are you doing to these things?
I'm extremely strong.
No doubt. Wow. God,
I did a YouTube exercise video and I got ripped.
I've never
thought
about this.
Just like your favorite crackers rips from last week.
This is so interesting. I would also think that it would be really nice if ice cream came in like square cartons. But then again, we scoop them with things that are round.
Yeah. And like they did come in square like bricks when we were kids. Like the store brand ice cream would be in like a cardboard brick.
It was?
Yeah.
But that was like a... Oh, now I remember. It was like a folded paper carton.
Right. You're thinking like a moving box.
Thinking like a moving box.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Now you're thinking like a moving box.
Now. Yes. What else, Matthew? Anything else?
I got two more short ones. Okay. Foil-topped single-serving yogurt. Big fan.
As opposed to
having like a plastic lid that you take off. I like it.
That makes a lot of sense. You have less plastic.
And like, you know, I'm not gonna reclose like a 6-ounce yogurt cup. So
okay, that's fair. That's fair.
And Tic Tacs and Choco Babies.
What are Choco Babies?
Choco Babies are a Japanese candy that pretty much tastes like wax, but is dispensed from a container that's like a Tic Tac container.
Okay.
And I love the Tic Tac container. So satisfying.
I can't believe you aren't mentioning the Mintia container.
The Mintia container only sort of works.
Okay.
Like the Mintia container, the idea is you dispense a mint while it's closed into a little cup and then open a door and the mint is waiting for you in that cup. The problem is it only gets into the cup about half the time.
It's kind of like a gumball machine strategy.
It is.
Like, you know, you twist the thing, the gumball rolls down, and then you open the door and there's your gumball.
It's kind of like that, but it's as if like half the time you open the door and there was no gumball. I do love Mintia. And I like it's a very satisfying like shape and like shakeability of package. It just doesn't always dispense right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Tic Tacs always dispense right.
They do. They do. Tic Pacs.
Yeah.
Are really good. I like to buy my Tics by the pack.
That's right. The Tics do run in packs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. Well,
this was a great idea.
This was really fun. I feel like I learned some really depressing things. Mm-hmm.
This is not my conspiracy theory about plastic recycling. I learned this all from Planet Money. So.
Oh. You know, I subscribe to the Planet Money podcast, but I never listen to it.
Just kind of let it roll by.
I just let it roll by.
Sure. Yep.
Okay.
Well, then you missed out on a lot of information about, like, I don't know, dollarization in Argentina or something.
Okay, great. All right. Today's spilled mail is from listener Daniel.
Listener Daniel writes, "Bienvenidos, power dudes." That is the reason I ran this email. My question, though simple, may still spark your interest. I have two roommates in a small kitchen. We are constantly disagreeing about where kitchen items' homes should be. E.g., should the pots and pans live in the corner cabinet by the stove with the Lazy Susan inside? You know the type. Or should we put groceries like onions and potatoes in there? How do you resolve organizational spats and location-dependent disputes in your homes? From the Lion's Den, Daniel.
Wow.
Listener Daniel really has a way with words.
Daniel, this was very enjoyable. You go first, okay. Matthew. I've been thinking about this ever since I read it, and I'm still no closer to an answer.
Yeah, I don't think we really have organizationals, like at least not in the kitchen. We don't have organizational spats, but like I've caused a couple of different problems lately that could rise to the level of organizational spats. One is, you know, my 10-inch non-stick skillet.
Non-skid skillet.
It's long form. It's not skit. Wore out, and I got a new like OXO Good Grip skillet, which is very nice, but the handle does not, the hole in the handle is too small for the hook that the old skillet would hang from. And
that
so
must be a tiny hole.
It's a tiny hole. And so like I'm like, what do I do? Like I don't want to return this skillet that I've already used. So now it's just kind of living like on the floor in the dining room, which is not great. It's right there.
minute. But you have other hooks that you could hang it on.
I tried hanging it on one of the other hooks, and it fell off and caused other problems.
You know, you could just buy another hook.
I could. I know, but then I have to, like, figure out exactly which hook to get and, like, where to put it. Like it's becoming an organization. It sounds like it's turning into an organizational spat between you and me, and you don't even live here.
I don't. Okay, so this is a really good one because we've actually had to do a whole bunch of rearranging lately because of, like, how unchildproofed our kitchen was. Basically, all of the pots and pans and lids, our microwave, our toaster oven, our slot toaster. Yes, we do have both. Mm-hmm. Our stand mixer, all of that stuff was on, like, open shelving at, like, knee level.
Sure.
Okay. Including, oh my God, I used to keep my Le Creuset Dutch oven on top of the microwave. So if someone, let's say an 11-month-old baby, were to grab it, I can't even imagine. Yeah. Anyway, so we've had to rearrange a lot of things. And right now I feel like we have things that are not in logical places. Like I don't have any place for the Dutch oven other than leaving it on top of the stove, which I don't really like. That said, my spouse uses the kitchen so differently and so much less than I do that, I mean, this is the nice thing about... I guess only living with one other adult and having them not be very into cooking. Mm-hmm,
sure. Now, Percy, on the other hand, has some very strong opinions.
Ash and I, however...
Percy is a guinea pig, by the way.
I mean, I think that this is kind of... I often think about the effect of handedness on kitchen layout.
That's an interesting point.
And I'm curious to think about, like, you know, are your housemates, like, well, number one, do they cook as much as you do? Number two, are you guys all, like, the same hand dominant?
Yeah, like, my housemates, like, we're all righties and like, I'm the main cook. So that kind of makes it easy to avoid spats, I think.
Yes.
It's very fun to say spats.
Spats. My housemates are all right-handed as well, mm-hmm. baby to be determined.
Sure.
And I do think that a lot of the way that the kitchen has been laid out, because there's not a lot of stuff in our kitchen that is fixed. I mean, we have these, like, restaurant prep tables, so we've been able to move them and place them where we want them. And I think a lot of it happened organically because of the way that we were already cooking in there. But I think also the fact that we're both right-handed, the fact that we both tend to use the same area for the same things, et cetera.
Yeah, it's definitely time for a purge around here. Do you celebrate the purge?
You know, yes, sure. I celebrate the purge. Yeah.
When is the purge?
When is the purge? God, I love a purge.
Oh, yeah, I need to, yeah, like, I think the next kitchen purge is going to be very satisfying.
Oh, wow, that's going to be great.
But it's not going to happen. Well, I mean, as you're listening to this, it's January. It could happen this month.
It could happen this month.
Why not?
Okay, all right, everybody. Wow.
We have dove in headfirst into a package and may never emerge.
Except for the great purge.
Except for the purge.
Yeah. Okay.
Emerge during the purge.
Except that. Too bad we can't use that as our closing joke.
Producer Abby, like, move where we said emerge during the purge. Move that to the end.
Okay. Our producer is Abby Circatella.
Uh huh. Who like purges the worst of each episode.
That's right.
And we told you about our stuff.
Yeah, we got stuff. You can rate and review us wherever you get podcasts.
And you can. I would love to see a discussion about most and least favorite food packaging breakout over on everythingspilledmilk.reddit.com.
I'm sure there are some egregious examples of horrible food packaging that we forgot, as well as true
works of genius.
True.
We don't even need to change the
North Stars of
true
packaging.
North Stars. That's right. I was going to say that they can be PEFPs, perfectly engineered food packaging.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Let's muddy the waters.
Let's do.
All right. Until next time, thank you for listening to Spilled Milk.
The show that is integrating zippers
into all of our clothing, including underwear.
Oh, hey, my pickle jar is leaky, if you know what I mean.
I think I know what you mean, and I'm disturbed. I'm Matthew Hamster Burton.
I'm Molly Weisenberg.
Babies love gross stuff.
Babies love gross stuff.
I've seen babies eat dirt.
This morning, I peeled a satsuma and I took a section and I pulled as much pith off of it as I could. And then I bit it in half and gave him half of it. And he seemed to really enjoy it, sucked all the juice out, and then held the like membrane in his mouth for literally 10 minutes.
Oh, sure.
It was, I kept going like, please let me dig that out.
Nope.
Nope. Wouldn't let me. Finally, he spit it out in front of the shower door. All right. Well, yeah.
Emmy award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.